Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now in studio is Gabriel Thompson, a journalist who's written for The New York Times, Harper's, New York, Slate, Mother Jones, Virginia Quarterly Review, and The Nation. His articles about labor and immigration have won a number of prizes, including the Studs Terkel Media Award and the Sydney Award. He's the author of America's Social Arsonists, Fred Ross and the Grassroots Organizing in the 20th Century, and his latest book just out is Chasing the Harvest, Migrant Workers in California Agriculture. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gabriel Thompson.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And of course, the issue of immigration is inextricably bound in what you're writing about in Chasing the Harvest. And it's an interesting and somewhat confusing political landscape, because on the one hand, you've got left-wing groups like MALDEF in bed with agribusiness, in the sense that they're on the same page. And then you've got, you know, right-wing groups like the Minutemen being in a sort of tacit alliance with left-wing labor unions. So how do you navigate the broader political landscape in terms of immigrants' rights and the extent to which, you know, so much of the lack of an immigration policy in this country has to do with the wishes of agribusiness trumping those of the people who actually need to be protected and have the protection, which, by the way, they're starting to lose under the Trump administration.
Yeah, well, one of the things you notice right away, you know, it was an interesting time to be working on this book, because it's a book of oral histories of California farm workers. And so there's 17 people who tell their stories of their lives in their own words, up starting as north as Stockton, south to Calexico, right up against the U.S.-Mexico border wall. And I was doing all those interviews during the election, during last year's campaign, and there was already a sense of anxiety and fear about what might happen if Trump would win. But there was also, it was sort of lightened by the fact that people didn't take the threat quite that seriously. And so now, as I go back, we had an event last night in El Centro, in the Imperial Valley, with a bunch of the farm workers who are in the book. And when I go back to the Coachella Valley, the different agricultural valleys from which these folks live that I interviewed, it's impossible not to miss the heaviness. It's not that, of course, people weren't being deported under Obama. They certainly were, but that the idea that everyone now is a priority, that I've been speaking with people who are limiting the amount of time they go outside, they go to work and back, they're not going to church, they're not going to movies. So all of the strange political alliances that you describe in the question, the way they play out in the lives of people right now is that there's just a huge amount of uncertainty, which is that's part of, I think, the undocumented experience in general. So it's not new, but it's ratcheted up. And the other thing that's really clear in terms of the new reality now is that the kids of these farm workers and of undocumented immigrants around the country and in California have been listening for months in 2016 during the campaign about their parents talking about what might happen if Trump wins, building a wall, sending everyone back. And they're smart. They hear everything. You can be in first grade, even kindergarten, you know what's going on. And so then he won. And so you see a lot of stress being played out in different ways within the families, within parents trying to figure out how much do they tell their kids, with kids trying to figure out what does it mean when my parents leave for work and they say, as some parents that I've interviewed have told me, they try to tell their kids at least a couple times a week that, you know, I might not be back and here's the plan. That kind of stress, I think, will have ramifications down the road. It's very hard to study. It's very hard to feel stable as a kid if you have that sort of daily threat that you feel like you live under.
Well, obviously Obama was the deporter in chief, but my understanding is, in terms of statistics, most of those were deported were those that crossed the border and were interdicted at the border, whereas the Trump regime is different. They're starting to deport people that live here in the United States. These are within the communities that have lived here. And again, just back to the needs of agribusiness, they have an immediate need, but they don't want to take any long-term responsibility. So people come and then they're left sort of high and dry, if you will. And then they, because they're industrious and hardworking people, they tend to make a life for themselves and their children. And now the very foundations of these lives is being threatened because a parent, as we saw a little while back here in Los Angeles, a parent dropping his daughter off at school, it was suddenly picked up by ICE. So I did a forum recently at UCLA at the Hammer Museum on dreamers, and we had a dreamer there who described exactly what you're describing in terms of how she grew up. And this is in the Midwest, where she was told from the time she was about 8 years old that her parents could be deported, and they had a plan. She had to learn to drive when she was about 10, because the part of the plan was to be able to drive to a relative.
Wow.
And she got busted at school at the age of 14 because she was running late to school and parked in the spot, and then they suddenly hauled her into the principal's office, and then she thought she was going to be deported. The personal stress that we put these kids under, not just their own security, but particularly the security of losing their parents, is just so cruel. So I take it what you've been trying to do here, Gabriel Thompson, again, independent journalist who's written for the New York Times, Harper's, New York Slate, Mother Jones, Virginia Quarterly, and The Nation, and he received the Studs Terkel Media Award and the Sydney Award for his writings about labor and immigration issues, and his latest book just out is Chasing the Harvest, Migrant Workers in California Agriculture. What you're trying to do in this book is essentially put a face on. I mean, we I don't know whether you recall the movement A Day Without a Mexican, but that seems to me to be, at the end of the day, what really we need as a nation. We can't have it both ways. You can't have the sort of your standard of living underwritten by invisible people and try and pretend that they're not there. And now I think Trump, in a way, is forcing us to face people in the shadows.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things that I hope that the book does is in some ways allow the reader to invite a group of farm workers into their living room. And so you're reading, you know, these direct stories from the farm workers' mouths. So I edited it, but it's actually based on these long extended interviews. And to see farm workers and to see immigrants as kind of three-dimensional, as complicated as any of us. I've written for about 10 years with a focus on farm workers, and one of the things that comes up is that you're usually writing about problems facing farm workers, and they're real. You know, pesticide. There's someone in the book who spent 5 days in the hospital after being acutely poisoned by pesticides. There's a woman who was raped by her supervisor, finally got up the courage to complain to the company, was then fired, was then deported, then got her way back and sued the company. There's wage theft. So there are real and numerous crises facing farm workers. But, you know, I spent a couple months working in the fields myself in the lettuce fields of Yuma, Arizona, and what you also find in the fields is joy sometimes, and you find solidarity, and you find crews that sort of become second families. And so I think that it's I'm hoping that by sharing these stories, not only do you get an in-depth look at the people who are in many ways feeding you, not just in California, but the products that go all around the country and around the world, but that they get moved from just nameless masses of miserable people who huddle from one place to the next, but who are also have dreams and aspirations and often have a real pride in the work. And so I think that's, despite all of the hardships, there is this streak, this like stubborn optimism that kind of, that you can feel in each person's story.
I mean, I think at the heart of a lot of why Trump's racism has traction is that obviously the changing demographics are alarming the white working class. But in general, it's just an inexorable fact that simply being born white will no longer confer privilege. The world is changing. And it seems to be that that insecurity is being exploited. Because at the end of the day, I don't believe that these hardworking immigrants take jobs away from anybody. They just do the jobs, and they do them under conditions that are outrageous and exploitative, but they do the jobs. And so what do you think is the – do you think that's a subtext here?
Yeah, and I think in many ways they're very – you know, if you think of the quote-unquote American dream, they believe in it a lot more than – a lot of people I know who are born in the U.S. believe in it.
The immigrants.
I mean, the idea, a lot of the people I'm interviewing are our parents. One oral history I do, it's with a mom, dad, and their daughter. The daughter is now going to, just graduating from Cal State Long Beach. Another father who worked in the grape fields. His daughter is in college as well. She's a dreamer. And so they arrive with this faith. One of the themes throughout is the value of education, the value of hard work and the value of education, and the idea that if you work hard and if you study, that this is a great place to be. There's a lot of U.S.-born people who don't believe that. And so in some ways, when you dig into their stories, what you see is this very deep belief in the American dream. And I think that's important to recognize. I think it's important to, when you think too about, and they all feel, you know, it's very clear that everyone feels, takes the insults from Trump extremely personally. Even though many of them think he's a buffoon to talk to, you know, they sort of watching it like, how can this be the country where this is happening? But at the same time, the idea that not only is he saying these things, but people, it gets people riled up, I think is kind of bewildering to them. It's still bewildering to me, but especially to them. You know, the idea that you're out there working and you're harvesting food and the food's going around the country and you're feeding people and you do it day after day after day, whether or not you have, technically you have legal status in the country, you feel like you're doing an important role, and obviously you should keep doing that.
Well, Gabriel, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I thank you very much for joining us here today in the studio.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Gabriel Thompson, who's a journalist who has written for The New York Times, Harper's, New York, Slate, Mother Jones, Virginia Quarterly Review, and The Nation. His articles about labor and immigration have won a number of prizes, including the Studs Terkel Media Award and the Sydney Award. And he's the author of America's Social Arsonist, Fred Ross and the Grassroots Organizing in the 20th Century. And his latest book just out is Chasing the Harvest, Migrant Workers in California Agriculture. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.